Good morning, everyone. This morning we are in Deuteronomy 25, and we have more various laws, or sundry laws as they call them, in this chapter. Let's begin. If there is a dispute between men and they go to court and the judges decide their case and they justify the righteous and condemn the wicked, then it shall be, if the wicked man deserves to be beaten, the judges shall then make him lie down and be beaten in his presence with the number of stripes according to his guilt. He may beat him 40 times, but no more, so that he does not beat him with many more stripes than these, and your brother is not degraded in your eyes. It's kind of an interesting passage. So they limited the amount of times that you could beat this criminal, so to speak, to 40 times. Now, because, you know, when you're coming to 40, let's say you were, you know, lashing someone and you didn't want to do it more than 40 and you were counting, you may stop at 39, because what if you miscounted? So you'd stop short to make sure that you don't go over the 40. Well, that plays into the New Testament. And let me see if I can put my finger on it here. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, the Apostle Paul is speaking, and he says, "Five times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked." And he's going through some of the persecutions and things that he received. So when the Jews, you know, when he started converting to Christianity and pronouncing faith in Jesus, and the Jews persecuted him for it, he five times received 39 lashes. Can you imagine? And he kept going and doing his missionary work. What a man he was, the Apostle Paul. But you see, they stopped at 39 because they wanted to make sure they didn't violate the old covenant and go over 40. And it's believed, many believe, that Jesus also likely received 39 lashes when they were preparing him for the cross. All right, "You shall not muzzle the ox while he is threshing." God is like, hey, that ox needs to eat. So, you know, when he's working hard for you, don't muzzle him. "When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go in to her and take her to himself as wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. It shall be that the firstborn whom she bear shall assume the name of his dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel." It's believed that part of this is because of inheritance rights, and it's not that a woman could inherit land, but it was more normal, I guess, for the family land and inheritance to pass down to the sons of the family. And if someone died and had no sons, instead of losing that inheritance, they would have the wife of the husband who died, if the other brother wasn't married, then to take the brother as a wife, and then things could all stay in the family. Now, again, and we've said this many times as we've gone through this journey through the Old Covenant, we're not in the Old Covenant anymore. We're under a New Covenant, and what's not taught to us in the New Covenant regarding the Old is not binding. So the Old Covenant, much of it is, by the way, and much of it's talked about, much of it's reiterated, some of it's strengthened, but we have to have a New Testament lens to understand the Old, and this is not something that's carried forth and talked about in the New Covenant. But it is something that existed then. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I guess I can understand this from an inheritance perspective, or also just keeping the family name going. You know, but sometimes we just did not live in this era so many years ago and what God was trying to do. And I just trust him. I trust him in things that I don't always understand why it may go a certain way back then. And I do my best to try to give us a reasonable understanding of what God was after. But sometimes we just don't know everything from what was, you know, put in effect this many years back. But I trust that God, in his wisdom, had good intention of it all. Verse 7, but if the man does not desire to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate to the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to establish a name for his brother in Israel. And part of it is we wanting the brother's name who died to continue. He is not willing to perform the duty of a husband's brother to me. Then the elders of his city shall summon him to speak to him. And if he persists and says, I don't desire to take her, then his brother's wife shall come to him in the sight of the elders and pull his sandal off his foot and spit in his face. And she shall declare, thus it is done to the man who does not build up his brother's house. In Israel his name shall be called the house of him whose sandal is removed. Now, one of the things that's interesting is we see something very similar to this in the book of Ruth. When they went away to the land they shouldn't have went to, they went to the land of Moab, and there her husband died, and at her mom, her mother-in-law husband died too, and they end up going back to their homeland, and then Boaz, you might recall, ended up taking Ruth as his wife, but someone else, in a sense, had this law could have been in effect where someone else had a right to, like, take her first, and that person had to come before the elders and say, no, I'm not going to take her. And then Boaz was able to marry Ruth, and then from that marriage, if you are familiar with the book of Ruth, from that marriage, and they end up having children, and from those children comes Jesse, which comes David, which then comes Jesus. So through this tragic scene where Ruth's husband dies and she has to, you know, go back to her homeland and then ends up marrying Ruth, we end up getting the miraculous births of Jesse, David, and then ultimately Jesus comes from that line. It's quite a special story, and it illustrates that at the end of the story. If you haven't read the book of Ruth, we'll get to it in our journey, probably in the not-too-distant future. All right. So if two men, verse 11, a man and his countrymen are struggling together, and the wife of one comes near to deliver the husband from the hand of the one who is striking him and puts out her hand and seizes his genitals, then you shall cut off her hand. You shall not show pity. That's very interesting, right? So two men are fighting, and the wife comes and grabs and seizes the genitals of the one she's trying to, you know, help her husband with. And God is making this known that, you know what, he doesn't want people going after the genitals. And even in this situation where they were fighting, he's saying, no, it's not appropriate to go after someone's genitals. And I think it's interesting. He must really feel strongly about this, because he's doing it in a situation where even where two men are fighting and the woman's trying to defend her husband. But how much more then would it mean to not mess with someone's genitals, like, at other times? You know, if there was a justifiable time, maybe it would have been when you're trying to help your husband. But God's saying, no, that's not even justifiable to go after someone's genitals. So that would mean, you know, that's a thing you're just not to do. And I think that's why it's coming across this way, is because he's making it very clear that's just inappropriate to go after someone's genitals. So verse 13, you shall not have in your bag differing weights, a large and a small. And, you know, back in the day, the money changers could try to disguise the weights of things in order to benefit themselves. And he's saying, don't have that around. Don't even have the ability where you could cheat like that. You shall not have in your house differing measures, a small and a large, or a large and a small. You shall not have a full and just weight. You shall have a full and just weight. You shall have a full and just measure, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. For everyone who does these things, everyone who acts unjustly, is an abomination to the Lord your God. So to cheat in the weighing of things is an abomination. So that's how they would know, like if you were giving of gold or silver or other coins, the weight of it is showed its value. So they did have scales like that to measure the weight of what you were providing. But there'd be ways to disguise your coin could be made of something heavier and made to appear like something else. And he doesn't want anything unjust. He calls that an abomination, to be unjust in that way. Verse 17, remember what Amalek did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt. So Amalek is an enemy nation who came up against Israel when they had escaped Egypt. How he met you along the way and attacked among you all the stragglers at your rear when you were faint and weary, and he did not fear God. Therefore it shall come about when the Lord your God has given you rest from all your surrounding enemies in the land which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance to possess. You shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. You must not forget. And it's interesting that Amalekites ended up really being trouble for Israel all throughout history. And they were not, it doesn't appear they were fully defeated the way that they should have been by Israel's army and even by David. And later on, you might recall that a guy by the name of Haman in the book of Esther wants to exterminate all the Jews. And he is a descendant of the Amalekites. And the Amalekites and the Jews are have been enemies all throughout history. Some believe that even some of the either Arab or Palestinian nations come from the Amalekites, who, and they're still warring today. But yeah, it's interesting that this carries forth even to the book of Esther. You might recall that story, and that'll come up in our situation in our Bible reading too, where Haman was a wicked and wanted to exterminate all the Jews, but Esther was the queen of the king, and she stepped in and risked her life for such a time as this, and the edict to kill the Jews was removed as a result of her efforts back in that book, the book of Esther. So there you have it, various sundry laws. All of Scripture is good for us to take in and consider. And we'll see you again in chapter 26. God bless you all.